In case you don't know them, here's just a bit of an introduction. In 2001, after graduating from George Fox University, John was employed at Reedwood Friends Church as middle school and high school coordinator. And then after that year, they moved to New Jersey, where John did his Master of Divinity at Princeton. And then after that, they moved to Tacoma, where he pastored a friend's church. And then he did his PhD under the supervision of Ben Pink Dandelion, who you know. And he did it in Quaker studies, focusing on John Woolman. He has taught in our CCS program. He's been our scholar in residence. And John is now teaching. He's a professor at Pacific Lutheran. So John, Jessica, Lucy, Luella, we are absolutely delighted.
The scripture reading this morning is from Psalm 85, verses 8 to 13. Let me hear what God the Lord will speak, for he will speak peace to his people, to his faithful, to those who turn to him in their hearts. Surely his salvation is at hand for those who fear him, that his glory may dwell in our land. Steadfast love and faithfulness will meet. Righteousness and peace will kiss each other. Faithfulness will spring up from the ground, and righteousness will look down from the sky. The Lord will give what is good, and our land will yield its increase. Righteousness will go before him and will make a path for his steps.
Well, thank you for inviting me to speak with you today. It's good to see so many familiar faces and think about the wonderful memories I have of ministering here amongst you all and our long, almost 20-year history together. And it's fun to come back with my ever-changing reality of children who are being added to the fold and growing and developing new skills and growing into senses of themselves in new ways, and getting to see you all and share you with them. So thank you for inviting me to come speak with you today. It is Father's Day, and Father's Day can stir up any number of feelings. Of course, fatherhood and motherhood go beyond biology. Any child who is adopted into a loving and nurturing family can tell you that fatherhood and motherhood are more than inherited cells and chromosomes. Mentors can be mothers and fathers. Other relatives and friends can be fathers and mothers. Teachers can be fathers and mothers. Over time, someone can grow into being a father and a mother. In some religious traditions, spiritual leaders are called fathers and mothers. To father or to mother brings to mind traits of nurture and compassion, guidance, and sensitivity. So there is no one way to feel about a day like today. A day like today can bring up a lot of emotions. A list of possible word associations might read like this: joy, regret, frustration, anger, fulfillment, disappointment, emptiness, gratitude, warmth, concern, anticipation and exhaustion. I can think of another word that might sometimes be associated with parenthood and the relationships that spring out of an encounter of mother, father, and child. That word would be surprise. You're going to have a baby. Surprise. For many of us here today, that would be a surprise. Some people find out the sex of their baby in an ultrasound, and some at the time of birth. It's a girl. Surprise. With our newest daughter, Luella, she was born in March. We had our due date. Then the doctors recommended a scheduled C-section, so we got a new date for the scheduled C-section. And Jess and I love schedules. We like having everything in order, and so a scheduled C-section was quite the relief for us and was a wonderful thing. We could plan out our spring semesters. I planned out my spring semester so that I would teach class on Tuesday. On Wednesday, we'd go in for the scheduled C-section. On Thursday, the students would watch a video out of class. And then the next week was spring break. So perfect. Just keep on rolling. And Jessica, likewise, planned her spring semester so that the day before the C-section would be her last day. And then all the substitute plans, the maternity substitute plans, would be all prepared for the next day, picking up the next day and going through the rest of the semester. Well, Luella couldn't wait. The weekend before the scheduled C-section, we rushed to the hospital for an emergency C-section. Surprise! In the comings and goings of our lives, the number of outcomes we have control over is generally less than we think. Especially if by outcomes we mean the plans we make and the expectations we carry. And sometimes the divergence of life events from our plans is so much better than we had expected. Walking into church, you hear a beautiful, strong tenor coming from the sanctuary. Who is that singing, you ask? Oh, that's so-and-so's grandson. You mean the little boy who could never seem to comb his hair or get the buttons on his shirt lined up? The one who spilled apple juice all over the minister at Easter breakfast? Yep, that's the one. Well, that beats me. I never would have guessed such a rambunctious little boy would be able to sing like that. I pictured him more as a driver in one of those events they have at the fair where everyone crashes their cars into each other. You mean a destruction derby? Yeah, where the cars get all smashed up and there's lots of bangs and booms. That boy was always into something. Someone says, but he's not a little boy anymore. He just graduated from college, and he's come back. They say he wants to sing and worship. They say he's got a lot of talent. With wonder, you respond. People sure can surprise, I guess. One just never knows. Indeed, one just never knows. In fact, one might say that accepting the gifts, insecurities, wonder, and metamorphizing nature of all persons is a doorway to experiencing the unfathomable life of God. In every true encounter of one person with another lies the potential for surprise and change. In every true encounter is the recognition that each person has inherent dignity and is an unrepeatable individual whose mystery is limitless. This type of encounter is an openness to another person with all of their thorn and thistle, an encounter that can lead to an experience of Christ, not in some generalized way, but in the concrete and particular way, completely dependent on the specifics of this person standing in front of you. In other words, we are dependent upon each other. The twists and turns and choices and misfortunes and awakeness of one person's life as it encounters the twists and turns and choices and misfortunes and awakeness of another person's life is a unique meeting place with the present Christ. An absolutely original encounter of one with another. That is also an absolutely original encounter of both with God. Luella leads me to God in ways that only Luella can. Lucy leads me to God in ways that only Lucy can. Jessica leads me to God in only ways that Jessica can. We know this to be true because we have experienced it in the challenging relationships that extend our relational boundaries. In the infant that enters your life and disrupts it, and grows and matures and develops and drives you up the wall, in fairness, and asks you to relinquish your sense of what should be for the compassion of what is. In the misbehaving child who becomes a sensitive minister. In the neighbor, uncle, politician, religious leader, teacher, co-worker, daughter-in-law, fellow congregant, whose sensibility and ways of making sense of the world are crosswise to your own, but that when you think of them, a smile crosses your face and a silent thank you kind of seeps into your heart. All of these are the dramas and surprises of spiritual encounter, which is to say, true encounter in its living and transformational sense. The most irritating and disruptive encounter of all may well be the unsettledness of faith that realizes that not only are other irritating people crossways to our sensibilities, but that God is crossways to our sensibilities. And that God's limitless mystery creates a disjuncture in our understanding that cannot be resolved. It can only be accepted. Acknowledging this disjuncture between God and us and leaning into it is the basis for that genre of faith called lament. The history of God's journey with the people of Judah, as described in Psalm 85, is a lament. It recalls a period of time known as the Babylonian exile. It happened after an ill-conceived war that went very badly. The Babylonians laid siege to Jerusalem. There was great suffering. The siege lasted between 18 and 30 months. Many people starved. Then the Babylonians broke through the walls. Many of the leaders and the educated of Judah were taken off into captivity. After defeating Judah in battle, the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar sent troops to Jerusalem to raze it to the ground. The temple was destroyed. Jerusalem was in ruins. A lot of history disappeared. Decades later, living in Babylon as servants, many of the Psalms were written. Psalm 85 has in the background the trauma and hopelessness of exile mixed together with faith in God's forgiveness and redemption. It recalls how the Jewish hope for deliverance from Babylon was realized. The Persians, out of nowhere, the Persians conquered the Babylonians and instituted a more lenient policy toward conquered peoples, eventually allowing the people of Judah to return to Jerusalem and granted them permission to rebuild the city and the temple. And Jews moved back to Jerusalem in droves. There was a lot of energy, a lot of excitement. Oh boy, this will be great. We'll rebuild the temple bigger and better than before. Out of nowhere, God had redeemed the people and released them from their bondage. What a magnificent surprise. And then the practicalities of rebuilding set in. The reality on the ground amongst the ruins in Jerusalem was a little disappointing. There were problems of leadership. The crops did not grow. No one could see eye to eye. Instead of the expected bounty and abundance, there was infighting, delays, and mismanagement. If one were to Google the terms major home remodel and marriage, one would find 4,750,000 results on the perils to one's marriage of remodeling a home. And here's one article title: How to Survive Home Renovation Without Killing Your Spouse. It seems like the bar is pretty low on that one. Okay, now imagine you are living in close proximity to thousands of other people who have their own ideas about the way things should go, and you are trying to do a complete renovation of a major city and all of its cultural artifacts. Think about that. When, oh when, will the temple be rebuilt? How many decades must pass? And so we have our little psalm. Frustrated with God and their neighbors, the person who set this lament to paper wrote down some questions for God, a practice that has fallen out of fashion lately, but I think is a sign of a mature faith. God, will you be angry with us forever? God, will you prolong your anger to all generations? God, will you not revive us again? Maybe these were rhetorical questions. Maybe it was just venting. Whichever and whatever, and probably to the surprise of the person asking the questions, a response is given. An answer comes. It is not a simple yes or no. It is a promise, a statement of what happens when there is an encounter between God and a covenant partner. It is a poetic and prophetic account of God's mercy unfolding within a community. Steadfast love and faithfulness will meet. Righteousness and peace will kiss each other. Faithfulness will spring up from the ground, and righteousness will look down from the sky. The Lord will give what is good, and our land will yield its increase. This is a promise of the abundance of God's mercy fleshed out in community. God's response comes back. God forgives, God redeems, God finds a way to reconcile. This passage from Psalm 85 is the theme of the beautiful film Babette's Feast. If you have not seen it, you must. In 1987, the film won an Academy Award for the Best Foreign Language Film. Babette's Feast is the story of a small religious community on the rough coast of Denmark and a political refugee named Babette that fled France to live with this small community. The community, once vibrant, is floundering in unrealized dreams. They question the choices they have made in the past. They blame and resent each other. The founder and visionary of the community died many years ago, but is remembered fondly. With reverence, he is still called the pastor. The pastor's two daughters are doing their best to hold the dwindling remnant together. Their names are Martine after Martin Luther and Philippa after Luther's associate, Philip Melanchthon. At one time, Martine and Philippa had many suitors. But after their father's death, they dedicated themselves to his vision and the nurture of the handful of remaining saints. Now their youth has left them, and their health has suffered. They chose a life of asceticism and service, but as they look around at a squabbling, failing community, they begin to question those decisions. As providence would have it, on the 100th anniversary of the pastor's birthday, Babette, the Catholic refugee living with that Lutheran community, received word that she had won 10,000 francs in the lottery, enough money to make her rich for the rest of her life. Everyone expected that Babette would leave the community. However, before leaving Denmark, she made one final request. She wanted to cook a farewell meal in honor of the pastor's birthday. She purchased all of the materials with her own money. She had not asked for anything in 14 years. She wanted to do this, and so they agreed. During the meal, as course after amazing course was set before the community members, the mood changed around the table. Babette was the finest of chefs. And in her preparation of the meal, she used all of her skills, all of her talents to show an act of love for the community. That wonderful food was a gift of grace and a gift of love. And as it was eaten, the people around the table experienced this grace and love. At one point, two quarreling members leaned over to each other and forgave each other for wrongs they had committed in decades past. Resentments were let go. As the meal continued, the community members stopped quoting their pastor and started speaking words of blessing on their own. New life entered the community as the gift of grace took root among them and spread around that table. Not long after the evening had ended, Martine and Philippa thanked Babette for the wonderful meal and asked her when she would be leaving. Babette responded that she would not be leaving before she had no money. "What about the 10,000 francs?" they asked. Babette replied, "In my former life, I was the head chef at Café Anglais. The cost of dinner for 12 was 10,000 francs." She had spent her winnings, her fortune, as an act of love on the community. The film Babette's Feast describes the surprising grace that can erupt from simple gestures of hospitality. Babette gives everything that she has, her talents, her riches, her fortune, to the community as an act of extravagant love. And her surprising generosity melts the resentments and anger that were being held onto so tightly that had taken root in the community. In Babette's feast, a meal becomes a place of holy encounter when prepared with love and sacrifice. Where suspicion had replaced mercy, where resentment had replaced grace, where rightness had become an easy counterfeit for righteousness, Babette's open-handed gesture broke down walls and provided a meeting place for renewal. We need Babette's feast in our churches, in our families, and in our civil discourse. We need it now just as much as it was needed on the coast of Denmark. One symbol of the type of open-handed encounter with another that we need today could be the welcoming of a new child into one's life. When a newborn or a child comes home for the first time, it becomes apparent that whatever you may have thought before, your life will never be the same. You rearrange the furniture, where your desk was, or where your exercise equipment was, or where your pile of books was. There's a crib. Your prized painting easel gets moved to the closet, and a changing table takes its place. You spend a half hour frantically walking around the house, putting those darn outlet covers in all of the plug-ins. And then every time you vacuum for the next 5 years, you have to pry them out with your fingernails, being sure to plug them back in as soon as you are done. The rearranging of furniture and schedules is only symptomatic of the bigger changes that happen when you bring another person into your life and decide that you will nurture them and love them. Every child is completely unique. And that means they are unique from the parent, from their parents, and from the designs their parents may have for them. To bring a new baby or child into one's life is to make a new life together with all of the changes and surprises that may bring. Someone might say of their child, "I thought for sure she would be a hard-driving competitor like me, but she likes to take her time and watch from the sidelines until she's ready. I wonder where that comes from." Where does it come from? It's a mystery. To parent or grandparent or mentor is to receive with hospitality and embrace the encounter with another. And this is not news to you. You don't need my theologizing on parenthood. But in the act of welcoming a new child into one's life, or in the extravagant feast laid before a sometimes petty people, we see the type of encounter that is characterized by mercy and peace. Encounters with others that lead to mutual thriving will always entail a willingness to be surprised and changed. In those encounters, according to the psalmist, faithfulness will spring up from the ground. It will come unbidden. It will be unscripted. It will spring up at you, and you will look behind and see a trail of blessing. This type of encounter can happen in our churches when we are open to the good in others, to the gifts we all have, to the uniting spirit that binds. And we need this type of encounter as a nation. We need a national Babette's feast. Open-handed encounters with others that give generously of ourselves and listen deeply to the voices of those we regard with suspicion. This has me thinking about what kind of surprises I am open to, what kind of encounters I want to pursue, what the conditions are in which righteousness and peace will kiss each other. It has me thinking about where in my life and where in my circles of encounter God might do something surprising. Some may say it's no use. Some say our divisions are too daunting. Some say too much water has gone under the bridge. Some say there is nothing that can be done because the chasm is too wide and people will never change. I don't know. All I've got is this psalm and this promise. Steadfast love and faithfulness will meet. Righteousness and peace will kiss each other. Faithfulness will spring up from the ground, and righteousness will look down from the sky. That was the promise to the people of Judah, and that's the promise for us. I think it's enough. I think it's enough. Don't you?
the deep, deep love of Jesus, vast, unmeasured, boundless, free, rolling as a mighty ocean in its fullness over me, underneath me, all around me, is the current of thy love, leading onward, leading homeward to thy glorious rest above.